Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yes, people, Darren G, the Real Crime Real Time podcast. As you can see, we've got Sean. Sean is the one that's put this together, basically. And at the bottom on your screen, we've got Chet, who's a very colourful, reformed character with a fascinating story. Have you got a few books out? Oh, we'll speak about your book in a bit, Chet.
Okay. Yeah.
So introduce yourself then, Chet. Where are you from, mate? Where are you came from? Where were you born?
From born Hitchin. Hitchin, Hertfordshire.
Is that by Luton? Yeah.
My parents were asked to come in back in the day in 1966 when the English wanted immigrants to come across and work over, you know? So they were like invited across. So they were like the original ones, you know, who came across to work, to do the labor, what really white people didn't want to do, yeah, basically. So that's what they came and did, and they did that, and that's how we started off. So Hitch in Hertfordshire was the first place where we landed. My dad's uncles were there. We had to live in the same house, 12 of us in the same house. My dad's wages all had to go to him. £5 a week he was given to live on, just to, because that's how it worked back in the day, you know. Yeah. Because he never had the money for a house. They paid for his flight, so they said, right, now you're in debt to us, so you gotta, we want your wages, and you get this much a week to pay your flight back, you know.
Well, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah. That's how it all started off. Yeah.
Is Hitchin close to Luton?
Luton, Hitchin, Hertfordshire, Stevenage, Letchworth. We lived Hertfordshire. Now it's quite a nice area. Luton is quite rough.
Yeah.
Sean, you know the area more than me. How far apart are they?
Yeah, it's not too far from Luton. Reading your book, Chet, about you growing up down there.
Yes.
It got a lot rougher though, didn't it? In the north, the racism.
Yeah, well, let's keep it in Hertfordshire for now. So your family come over to work for this country for the jobs that the white people wouldn't do. Basically,
yes.
You're born down there. How was life as a young man or a young child growing up in that area? What was it like? Was it? Give us an insight into what it was like.
For me, it was like really weird, yeah, because I wasn't allowed to leave the house. English, I didn't know until I was nearly four. Punjabi was the only language that was spoken in the house. Because it was all Indians, and that's all what they spoke. The food I had to eat, that food, it was all shit. School I never went to at that age. I was just sort of basically kept inside the house, you know, until I was about four-ish. Childminders, we had to go with, but they were all illegal, and people used to leave all their kids there, and the mum and dads had to go to work. So we were left with illegal childminders, and then there was a raid once. The police got us all, stuck us in cells until our parents finished work and came to pick us up. It was all a bit of a rough ride. It was all like shit, you know. There was never any good days there, never any like holidays, never days out, because my mom and dad never had any money. They had to like pay the money back for the people that paid for their flights to come here. So it was like a case of, right, how much do we have to carry on fucking paying back to you, you know? And
you're Indian descent, you're in a predominantly white country. Uh-huh. Was there any racism towards you and your family when you first arrived?
Major. A good example of this is when my dad, this was in 1960, 68. The first time we went, no, 1969. The first time we went out to a bar, they said, okay, English pubs, because back then, yeah, Asians and blacks were scared to go to a local pub because it was all like white and it was all like back then, bam, 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 stronghold. And they were like sort of scared because the numbers weren't there. And if they did go, it would just be like 2 to 3 Asians and it'd be all white people, all drunk. And one example of this is me, my dad and his uncle went. They said, okay, let's go to an English bar, yeah, for a night. They went, right, okay. Because they were all around our house. The wives were there. The kids were there. We were having a little party. The three men left the house. They left the house, went to a bar. The story was this. They went to the bar and wouldn't get served. The barmaid wouldn't even serve them, serving all the white people, serving all the white people. They wouldn't get served. And then somebody came up to the back of my dad and said, today I joined the National Front. And I've got a knife in my pocket. So my dad and his pals, yeah, got scared of this. They weren't getting served. Everyone was looking at them, staring at them. So they just left the bar. Didn't even get a drink. And that was their first experience of going out to a bar in England, you know? And that's not a nice experience, yeah? But that was his first experience of it. And he told me this when they got back. They're all a bit like, shaken up about it, but they try to take it easy, as if it's like, okay, this is how it is, this is how it is, and this is how we have to deal with it. So from now, we don't go to the bar no more, you know, we stay away from them areas, we just do what we got to do, and that's just go to fucking work, basically. Just work, go home, sleep, bam, go back to work, don't go to bars, don't go to restaurants. And these are the ethics what were built into the Asians. And this is why they all stayed at home and made the money. Yeah. And now they've all got shops and this and that. You know, it makes sense in a way.
Yeah.
Because the English people...
Sorry, mate. You just mentioned the National Front. And that was, for people that don't know, that was sort of like a group of racists that years later was the equivalent of the EDL movement, weren't it?
Yes. Like, the EDL,
mild form of the NF, aren't they?
Yes. NF, it was like, boom, spray painted on your shop, yeah? Okay? Yeah. Spray painted on your house, NF, boom. Swastika next to it. It was all a bit like skinheads, braces, bam, the big boots. That was what the National Front meetings were. And when the National Front, you used to have marches back in the 80s, 70s, the 80s, they were quite heavy, you know? They were quite scary. It was like a lot of big white blokes, boom.
Yeah.
Tight tops, braces, jeans, big boots, walking the streets. And they looked, and they scared all of us. Look, you know, I ain't lying, yeah? But they did have an impact on me. And they were a terrifying fucking movement. And
they had.
It went away slowly.
I think communities at that time, Shet, and society at that time was a lot more tolerant to their behaviour.
Yes, it was.
So they could act the way they was acting back then.
Yes, it was.
The country was a lot more tolerant. When you move forward now and you've got these, let's say, new racist organisations that have just come and disappeared, if you like the VDL, the community and the society was less tolerant to their behaviour, and that's why they got shut down a lot faster, isn't it? When did you leave Hertfordshire?
Hertfordshire, when I was 4 years old.
How old was you when you left down them sides?
Four to five.
And then where was your life?
Huddersfield.
That was Huddersfield.
Huddersfield was just the same. That was all rough. The marches were happening there. Sundays, we were told not to go out on a Sunday evening because that was when bashing happened. Sunday evenings, that's when all the skins are all bored. And so they say, right, bashing, because what's on the TV back then, ITV, BBC One, BBC Two, it was all fucking...
Chet, let's call it P-bashing instead of that other word.
Okay, sorry for that. It's just because I've been called that up all my life, you know. I think it's okay to say it, okay, but right. Okay,
well, the people with brains on here will understand that you're not being racist. Yeah. You're just using a term that you've suffered.
Yes.
A long So let's just skip to that because it sounds very traumatic. let's just jump to the age of 16. Where was you? What was you doing at them ages?
Right, 16. We moved up to Washington, northeast of England. My dad, he had a shop in Huddersfield, but the shops up the north were a lot cheaper. And the hours were all a bit laxy-daisy up here. The white people didn't really want to work. They only opened up the shops till about 6 o'clock and then closed down. Wednesday, half closing. Sunday, don't even open up. So it was like, it was there to be done, you know? And this is why the Asians in the 80s moved up to the north, because shops were cheap. Drinking culture in the north is massive, and these guys didn't know how to run a shop, really. So, or food takeaways, or any sort of other business. This is why it's all Asians, who are doing the foods, the food market, retail market, down on the street level. We know how to do it. We know how to stick the hours in. 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, no holidays. We don't need it. We'll just fucking graft until we get where we want. And that was my ethic. And that's when we moved up here. So this is why I put up with all the fucking shit. The racism up here was even worse.
I think it's a well known matter that the more north you go, the more racist it is in this country. That's what they say.
That's right.
Is that even worse?
It's right. The further north you go, the worse it gets. So it was all a harsh ride. But you got to ride the harsh ones, haven't you? You got to ride it.
At least you still sat there able to do what you're doing. Now, without being personal or infringing on your personal life, I'm picking up some sort of speech impediment here. Is there anything going on there with your speech? Because it
Yes. Yes, stutter I've had, My brother, he has one as well, So we both have it. When I was young, it was really bad, I couldn't even say my name. Gachetin's my name, but every day in class, we were told to stand up in class in Huddersfield. I was only 4 and 5, and we had to say our names. Are you here? Everybody else used to stand up. Okay, Sean, I'm here. Pete, I'm here. My name, Gachetin, I used to go, gut. So I was a standing joke every morning. So every morning of the class, I was like a standing joke because I couldn't even say my fucking name. And this really annoyed me because I used to say to my dad, why didn't you just give me a name that was short? Yeah. 10 letters fucking long. It's 10 letters long. Yeah. I'm like, why are you giving me a name like that when I can't even fucking speak? So I've had this all my life. But and my dad, he took me to doctors and this and that. What's wrong with him? He can't even fucking speak. He can't do this. But they said that will go with confidence and time, but it will always stay with him. Yeah. It depends on how confident he is. Like, I meet guys now my age, and their stutter is still the same as when they were a kid, because their confidence level has not built up.
Yeah.
And I was told there's nothing that can stop a stutter. Yeah, there's nothing you can take, no pills, no tablet, no, like, talking to anybody. It's just, like, your own self, yeah? Your own being, stronger in yourself. And when you talk to people, put yourself out more. It's like, when I argue, stuttering don't happen because I'm fucking on it and my mind is booming on it. It's like when people sing, stutter. What's his name? Ed Sheeran. He stutters, but when he sings, he doesn't stutter.
Right, that's so what I'm saying. You wouldn't think he stutters because he's fluent in his.
Yes, I know. Yeah. Amazing.
Is that what it's like with you when you've got passion, when you're becoming a bit aggressive or assertive? Stutter disappears.
It goes because then it just comes out fast as fuck, and then I don't have fucking type of stutter because I'm on it. Yeah. But when I talk to people on the phone, the stutter comes out and it looks as if I'm a bit backward. But that's up to them, yeah.
Well, that's the only reason I've raised that there is because I don't want people thinking, hang on, he's not answering the question straight away. So what you're being here now is 100%.
I've had all my life. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So it's nice to get that out the way.
Cool. Okay.
What I want to move on to now then, mate, because you have had a notorious life, haven't you? You have become, you are a renowned and you are known as a renowned drug smuggler.
Uh-huh.
So let's speak about your life of crime and how you first started getting into that way of life. What influenced you? What happened to you for you to fall into that way of life? Having you said that your family was a businessman, he had shops. Yeah. So you must have had other avenues to take. What happened to you for you to participate in criminal activity, if you like?
Right, okay. The avenues I had was, okay, run the shop with my old man, buy houses, do this, do that. In this area, in the northeast, then it was fucking hard work. And I thought, I don't want this, yeah. A clothes shop I opened up, yeah? That was my thing. Okay, a clothes shop I can do. Because then my mind was not into crime at the time then. It was just to, like, business, money, this, that. The clothes shop, that was the opening because that's when I had that in Newcastle Town Centre. That's when I mixed with different people, not people from the council estate. It was people from the town people.
What year was this, mate?
This was, we're talking, I was 21, so we're talking after 68, 21 years on 68 is? 89. The beginning of the storm, Sean. That was the beginning of the storm, wasn't it? Anyway, that was the time I went, right, okay, I can't do this shop thing. It's not for me. I need fucking dollar. What my dad's making, what we're making at the shop, fair enough. But we're having to take a lot of shit for it as well. So other people are taking the shit and they're still making money. So I thought I'd rather just fucking make money and not take fucking shit. So the clothes shop I had, but when I had that, it was high fashion. A lot of people were coming to the shop, known firms from Newcastle. Back then, bag snatching was a thing. Bag snatching, getting the cards, because it was just a PDQ machine where you put the card in, run it through, douche, transaction done. You don't have to phone anybody. And once that's done, you get paid on it. And sorry to say, but that's how I made money in the early days. So that was what led me to crime and then money. And then I started to train steroids. And I thought, right, there's a market on this. So I thought I'll build on this market. And it's just
on the steroid, because you're a big man, aren't you? I can see you there. You're stocky. Uh-huh. You're well built.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is you went from, let's say, your clothes shop committing credit card fraud, thinking, I'm going to need a bit more of this dough. Because you've had that high-grade clothes shop, you've had the criminal fraternity coming into your shop. And so you start mixing with the local gangsters, if you like. You started training.
Yes. I was easily influenced, yeah. I will admit this. I was easily influenced by the guys that were coming in, and I was thinking, right, okay, I want that life. I want that life, really, which is wrong in a way. I shouldn't have been so naive and stupid. I should have concentrated on the clothes shop more, on my art more, concentrated on the things I was... Things I could do, you know, not things that, like, I thought were cool as fuck. Not think, okay, I want to be like this. I want to do this. But, okay, drugs, I did take it to the high level of the market that I was in. Because I think if you're going to do it to the top level.
What was the market? Steroids and?
Valium pills.
right? So yes, give us an insight. Yeah. Give us an insight on so how you've gone into that and how you've managed to.
Okay. The market on that started as being a doorman because I had to close the shop down because the police were watching my shop. I got told they're watching my shop because all these guys are coming in and they think you're dealing drugs. But like I wasn't, it was just fucking fraud. But so I had to close down the shop, made a move. I ripped a lot of people off. I didn't pay a lot of bills. And then I just thought, right, okay, fuck this. I'm going to be a doorman and sell drugs. Which is not like a wise thing to do now, yeah? To just say I'm going to be a doorman and sell drugs. You get nicked in about half an hour. But that was my thoughts back then. And back then, nobody else was in the market for the roids because it was just tiny, but they all wanted it. Because back then in the 90s, that's when people started to train, started to get big. That was when the whole world came into motion, really. Yeah. When everybody got massive, and I got accused of making everybody big in my area. They went, everybody from your village is huge. Why is that? I was giving them all steroids. They're all fucking huge for my village in Washington. And so that just fucking passed through. So I thought I'd take it to a bigger level. First, I was going to Spain, Greece, Turkey, holiday styles, taking my missus, take the kids, blah, blah, blah. Bringing a case back, it pays for the holiday. But I thought, listen, this has to be done on a huge level. And Pakistan was the best place in the world to go buy them because no country wants to do business with them. Taliban linked, Al Qaeda linked. And if you're not from there and you don't pay anybody off, there's a high risk they could take you away and hold you to ransom. And they work with the feds as well, so they're all interlinked, you know, so the police wouldn't even say anything. But then back then I just had the mindset, okay, I want to do this, I just want to make money. The volume was a huge market. It was I was paying £9 for 1,000 pills, and the street value here is £1 a pill, and I was selling them for £150 for a tub of 1,000. So £9 to 150, Darren, that's like better than any drug you know in it, really, in it, isn't it? Isn't
the percentage, yeah.
That market is incredible.
It's 100%. It's over 100% profit in it, instantly.
How was the
works of that? You know, how did you get them across? What was the
The workings of this is Karachi. You have to go to their side. That was quite hard work trying to link up with the original people because they had Karachi on lockdown. If you want a massive amount, there's only one person that you can go to, this one firm, and they were working with Al Qaeda. So they knew who I was, this and that. They said, has he got the money? And that's why they wanted the money up front on the first showing when I went to buy. The two guys I was with, my cousins, they were like, no, I ain't handing no money over here. But I was saying, listen, we've come all this fucking way. There's no other option, yeah? There's no other option. They control everything here. We have to pay them first. That's how they work. So that was the risk we took, and we paid them first. And then the pills came the next day.
So we paid them.
Yeah.
Did they get it to you? So you just went over, give the money, and it came to you wherever you were.
No. It came. We had to go to their shop, pick it up. It was all in boxes, packed up. Two taxis I had to get to put all the boxes in, and then took them back to the hotel. Hotel was cool. The first time round, getting them through Karachi Airport, it was quite like funny, yeah. Poor Mags, that bought my way through. I bought my way through them because Muslims there, they don't see no white women. It's impossible to get a magazine, no internet, no this, no that. So Poor Mags, we bought at Newcastle Airport because I don't know why we had about six of them, yeah. And anyway, we went through. And well, the
I can only imagine why, with the amount of steroids that was going through the system, your testosterone must have been going through the roof.
Well, that's why we had 6 porn mags.
When we wake up in the morning, we get out of bed and we start our day with Koro Snacks. Koro is a healthy snacks brand focusing on bringing additive-free natural ingredients to their customers with fair prices in bulk packaging. They have everything from nut butters to free from baking ingredients to cooking essentials and, of course, the snacks. Oh, these Syrian pumpkin seeds from Koro are amazing. I have them on my cheese on toast every morning. You've been getting into them, Jen?
Yes, and all the health benefits it brings.
Look at that.
There's quite a lot.
Lashings of them.
Right. Pop this in the oven then.
So what makes Koro special in comparison to others? Koro cares about sustainability. Their bulk packs save on packaging material compared to small single packs. For a 5% discount on Koro's products, use the code TRUECRIME with no space in between TRUE and CRIME. The link to Koro's online shop is in the description box on YouTube. Thanks for supporting our sponsor.
What happened then? The porn got you sort of let you get through with what you needed to get through with?
The first time round, yes. And we thought that was fucking a hit, yeah? We were like, bam, buzzing. Newcastle Airport, because you go through Amsterdam. You travel through Amsterdam, and that's where you change. And the Amsterdam flights are always at 5:40 a.m. So you land at Newcastle at about 6:40 in the morning time. But these are the times where these flights are empty, and they just think that you've come from Amsterdam. So the Pakistan tags we had on our cases, we'd take them off, the things, the tags, boom. Off, so it looks as if that we've just come from Amsterdam.
Right.
This is how we used to pass through, and it was ideal. It was ideal. And a few trips I did like that, so I had that all worked out. But the second time I went around to Pakistan, they knew my movements. They said, "Right, you have to pay us." The chief narcotics officer, Karachi Airport. He approached me and said, "Listen, I know who you are. I know what you're doing. How it works like this, yeah?" I went, "You don't pay nobody here. You don't go through this X-ray system. You don't go through that X-ray system. You pay me £100 a suitcase." And that's all he asked for, £100 a suitcase. And he went, "You can take anything you want through." I went, "Yeah?" So how we used to do it, me, my mules, who used to land, I used to phone him. He used to like, say to a guard, "Click his fingers, get these cases, take them all the way through," as if I was fucking Prince fucking Charles or something. And they used to walk me through, and everyone used to look at me, thinking, "Who the fuck is that just getting walked straight through without no X-ray, no nothing?" But in Karachi, it's doable. This is amazing. I love them countries, yeah? Because you know what it is with them countries? If you're good with them, loyal with them, don't fuck with them, and do what you're going to say with them, they're all right. They're all right. And they back you up. They back you up.
So how long was you in that game before you come unstuck? And what happened when you come unstuck? How was you arrested? Was you imprisoned? How long did you do? What was your experience like within the confines of the institutions you went into? What was all that about?
Okay. Right. This run didn't last for a long time, yeah, because I was hitting it up every 6 weeks. It was like a constant run. Different mules I was taking over all the time, yeah? Because when you're with a mule and you have to stay with them for 6 days, they fucking annoy you. Yeah? John, you might know about this. Yeah? They annoy you. You change the fucking mules, yeah? You know, right? I ain't going to good... Right, you got a new mule. So it's all new mules, yeah. So this is how he's passing time. But these new mules all talk, don't they? A mistake I made. I should have stuck with two good mules who don't open the fucking mouths. But we all make mistakes, don't we? Yeah. And anyway, that's what happened. And it lasted about a year and a half. The full
system. He was stuck down. Did you end up in prison?
I was going back a few times, though. You know, it was... But it didn't last that long.
It was good while it lasted.
It was good while it lasted, yeah. Yeah.
That's
it was good while it lasted. And then the jail come on me, Interpol, were on my flight, watching what I was doing. I got caught with the biggest seizure of pharmaceutical drugs in Spanish history. It was all over the news and the papers. They gave me a hard time. The police gave me a hard time. They knew who I was, and they taxed me of everything.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo, and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
My watch, my rings, my jewelry, bush, everything. Even fags. Towels I had. Towels even. The police took my towels. I went, really? I went, you want to take my towels? I went, go on then. Take it. And took it all. And the mules, they tried to get to talk against me. Because they said, right, listen, he's a boss. We know this. You're just a mule because he takes... They told him that they knew the whole thing, right? They knew it all. So I don't know how they got that fucking information, but they knew it all. Anyway, so the mules were young. It was a boyfriend, girlfriend. He was only 21. She was 19. Their first holiday abroad. And they thought they were going to put beach styles. She was packing her bikini and her sunblock. But really, do you know where we're going? Al-Qaeda, baby. you can't walk around the beach on there in a bikini.
So you were going on about the 2 years that you thought was going to get. How long did you end up getting anyway?
Right, okay. They told me 10 if I took to court, or 9 if I made a deal. I went, fuck that. Nine fucking year. I went, it's only fucking pills. They went, yes, but you do have $250,000. There was somebody who only had 4 Valium, but with the intent to sell, you got 9, yeah. With Spain, it's the intent, yeah? It's all about the intent. It's not about what you have. It's like if you have 1 ounce of cocaine or 10 kilo of cocaine, you get 9, yeah. But it's the intent to sell. It's the intent to sell. Even if you get caught with a bag that's wrapped up, if you're going to go to sell that bag, you'll get the same sentence as if you got 10 key, 100 key, or whatever. So 9 year. I went, fuck that, 9 year. And then I had to get my head around this, yeah? So I had to learn the language. I had to learn Spain, and I had to, like, try and mix with the top heads there. Top heads who know what they're doing, who were in for 160 kilos of this, 100 big
consignments.
Yeah, from Venezuela, Peru, Brazil, Switzerland, France, Morocco, Algeria, hash. Every country has a different drug, you know? So they all bring it into Spain. Spain seems to be the hot old. Yeah, that's where it all comes to. And from Spain, it goes into the rest of Europe.
Yeah, I guess divided around Europe.
Yeah, because Spain are linked with everybody, really. They're and so...
How long did you end up getting?
I got douche, right, because they said 9 year, right, because I learned Spanish, I learned a language, a bent judge I got. They went, if you give him a bong of 9 grand, including his fees, he'll get you half of that. I went, really? I went, right. Because in Spain, this at work. So I gave him 9 grand, 4.5 I got, and I served 3 years there.
So how was your experience whilst in them type of prisons? I've been in these prisons most of my life. And
yes.
I've never been in a prison
English
abroad.
Jails, yes. English jails, health, safety, this and that. it's all fucking shit and that, yeah, but like a fucking zoo. They just put everybody in with everybody. A third of the people got AIDS. They've got AIDS, and they just get medication just to keep them all fucking quiet. They're all doing 100 years, 140 years, because in Spain it works like this. Burglaries here, if you do 2 burglaries, 3 burglaries, 4 burglaries, 5 burglaries, you might get, okay, 2 years for that one, 1 year for that one, 18 year, I mean, for 18 months, 1 year, boom, boom, boom. But it runs concurrent. No. Yeah? It's staying consec.
Yeah.
So if you do 10 burglaries, you end up doing about 12 to 15, yeah? Right? Yeah. Which is quite a long time, yeah? And when you're in there, they share needles. It's all about the brown in there. And they're all sharing needles, and they all end up with fucking AIDS. A third of people in Spain have got AIDS, if you look on the stats.
Yeah. And is it a violent environment in there?
Well, yes, because they're all fucked up. And when heroin goes dry, they're all fucking on it. They're all on it, yeah? When nobody gets a visit and it's not on the wing, 40 heads on there, on my wing, because they're all fucking a bit mental. And when it's not on there, when it goes dry, and then they go a little bit fucking harsh. But when drugs are on the wing, it's okay. Everyone's a bit okay, easy. It's just the debts you got to... It's just the debts, you know? Drug debts, what people get. I used to lend the money in there. 1,000 pesetas for 1,500 back on the next week. But it was like a running thing. And I had a lot of these guys, yeah, that used to lend 2,000 pesetas for 3 back on the next Monday. And once they paid me the 3 back, they need that back again, don't they? So then I get it back again. So I never got any money in jail. I was just making money in jail.
When did that jail period end? When was you released from your Spanish custody?
I got released 2002, 2003, I went back in.
You went back in there or in this country?
In this country.
Don't know what's going on with Sean there.
Yeah.
Changing
his battery. So you went to jail in this country. What was that for, Chess?
Right, okay. Controlling prostitution, blackmail, and conspiracy to supply class A.
Bloody hell. Some nasty charges there.
Yes, I know, yeah. I think it fills every gap, doesn't it?
How long did you get in that sentence?
7.
That's harsh, 7. Isn't it, when you think about it? That's
yeah.
A harsh sentence for this.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Mm. It was.
Well, that sentence, I don't want to drag you to that. I don't really want to drag you to that sentence. Or
right,
that.
Okay, but Darren, yeah? Let me just explain something, yeah? Okay, when I come out of Spain, yeah? I got half my sentence, yeah?
Yeah.
For 4.5. So I thought I was a bit invincible, yeah? Okay? You know how it is, right?
Yeah.
You think, right, I'm fucking King fucking Kong here. So I joined a fucking firm. And Gid said they were doing the area. I joined them. But they were already getting watched by the feds. It's all a mistake on my part. It's all a mistake, naivety, stupidness. Don't make decisions when you're high. It's all about that, isn't it, at the end of the day. And that's why I got involved with them, and then I got another one up my ass.
Well, anyway, you're out now. You're a completely reformed character. What are you on now? You're back on your business. You're doing things that you're not brought up to do.
Right, yes. Houses I do still. Properties. I was explaining to Sean earlier, doing out another house. I'm selling 2 houses, 3 houses now, which I bought back in the day. They were only cheap back in the day. 90s we're talking about. Now they're worth dollar. I've sold them. I'm not going to say drug money's a whatever, yeah. Because I ain't paid no tax on this motherfucker, yeah? Okay, but it's all good. It can all be shown.
You're legit now.
It's all true.
Joe was mentioning earlier on that you're helping a lot of people.
Yeah.
With what you're doing now, you're helping a lot of people around the world, basically, aren't you? Do you want to speak about that?
Right. Okay. Yes. I was going to India, Thailand, Cambodia, them areas, kids, orphans that are born with AIDS and HIV. Yeah. I just thought these kids have the worst start in life, you know? Not us lot, right? We're all right here. You see kids here and you think, all right, fair enough. But kids over there that are born with HIV and AIDS, because AIDS I know a lot about, and you know, in jail, it just like came to me, all that shit, yeah? Children are born with that. They're not meant to have that. You know, you're just like, bam, that's what you've got from birth. There you go. That's a hard shift. That's a hard, you know, deal that you are dealt in life, isn't it? You know, you have no choice in that, motherfucker. And then the parents get rid of the kid. I think these kids are the ones that need the fucking help.
Yeah.
So I used to go to buy, I get a dollar in, get money in, my own money, and then I go to the orphanage and I see all the kids and I see, right, what's your size in shoes? What's your size in clothing? How many boys? How many girls? What do you actually fucking need? I don't hand them money over, because when you go to them, they say, just give money. I went, no. I'm going to go and buy, okay? I said, let me see what they need. I'm going to ask them myself, and they tell me. And I make a fucking list, yeah? And I go and buy for them. Yeah, so nobody can take out of that, yeah? So nobody can take out of that. Not the people
what you've got when you go to them charities, straight away from the top of from the get-go, they're taking 20% off what every donation, aren't they? So it's good if you can do it the way you've done it, to give it up front directly to the people that really need it. Yeah. I want to move on to your book now, because Sean's saying it's a powerful book and it's a powerful read. Do you want to talk about that? Does that give you, what does it do? Does it give you a full description of your life from the early days to now, or is it just part of your life?
Yeah, it's done. Right, okay, it's part of my life, yeah? It takes me up to 2002, when I came out of Spain. I'm going to do a second book as well, but this first one is when I was 3 years old, and it takes me through the full story, really, what we've just, like, talked about.
We just, like, bastardized this.
Yes, but it just goes through my emotions as well, yeah?
Yeah.
This book, really, I would say it's not like a gangster book, yeah? You know, it's like about my life. It's about hardship. It's about being an Asian kid. Being born here.
It's got a lot in it. It's got dealing with racism as an Asian child in this country. You talk about the NF and organizations like that.
Yes,
you got one. I think it's a fascinating story, and I've only heard a little bit of it. Do you understand?
Yes, because there's not many people who have been through all them stages from the 60s, right, okay, 70s, 80s, 90s, and now.
Yeah,
and totally. But I've experienced all of that, you know, and that's all in there, and it's from the street, you know? It's from the bottom, because this is where we all start from, yeah, the bottom, yeah, the street, the gutter. Secondhand clothing, you can't even talk, you're in backward school, you're this, you're that, you're fucking all fucked up. This is how we are, and this is and where we've come to, okay, from being them fucking backward fucking stupid kids with nothing, yeah? It's summer, I think. It's something.
Yeah, it is. So where can you get access to this book? Where is it going to be? Where can you purchase it?
It's from Amazon, Sean. Do you want to...
Yeah, it's available worldwide on Amazon as a paperback and an ebook. The audiobook is presently getting narrated. We'll put the links in the description box for Chet's book, and he's got a part two coming out. And like what you've heard today, there's so much more. There's the gangs, the mayhem in the Spanish prison, the Germans versus the Russians versus the locals, the weightlifting competitions.
You know what, Chet and Sean, we probably could have went a bit further, but with the availability of the Wi-Fi and that, we need to get what we can before it's up again.
Next time,
Well, we can have a better conversation, hopefully in person with Sean asking the questions. What I was going to say to you, is there any regrets in your life? Do you hold any regrets? Would you have done anything different? If you had a message for the children and the youth of today, what would that be?
Okay. The regrets I've got, is when I was doing what I was doing, I should have kept my mouth shut a little bit more. Not spoken to so many people, just spoken to the people that were tight to me, which really is my mom, really. Apart from that, I don't really have another one. So if I'd have told, but you know what it is? Just don't speak out. Just don't speak out because no one was happy. No one's happy if you're doing well.
Right. So that's a solid bit of advice, that, because the minute you start sharing your secrets, everyone wants to take them.
Bring you down. They don't want to bring you down. Anybody, you see it in the news, the papers, this and that. If anybody's doing well, they love a story to bring you down.
Yeah.
You know all about it, Darren. You know all about
it. I'm suffering it every single
day. Yeah, I know. You know all about that. So that's
with me, I've come out of prison. I've changed my ways. I'm trying to encourage the youth to lead better paths of life and stay away from the people that can damage them. Yes. What would you say to...
Right, what would I say? Instead of drugs, gangsterism, this fucking bollocks, this fireman styles, paramedics. If you don't like that shit, you want to be an electrician. I can't even get an electrician, and they're on £200 a day, right? Okay, I can't even get one to do any work for my houses. Tilers, plasterers, anybody skilled work. It's not hard to get a skilled trade, but if you're like fireman styles, if you do that, that's serious money. People are on $44,000 a year, and they only work half a year. And even that half year, they spend asleep because I know a lot of time.
What I'm gathering, Shed, what you'd say to the youth is, swerve the gangsterism, swerve them organised crime groups, the drug dealing, all that gang banging type of shit. Get yourself a trade, get yourself into a decent form of employment, and your life is a lot better and a lot more secure.
Of course. It's only way forward. There is no other way forward, is there really? You know it. Police intelligence, CCTV, it's at the highest level. The credit cards, they know your every move. You can't make a move, really, unless you're working with the feds. But if you're working with the feds, if you want to go down that road, and then whatever.
You only start working with the feds when you're involved in criminality anyway. So the bottom line is avoid the gangs, avoid the organized crime. Sean, we'll let him come back, then we'll say
The phone rang,
It's all right, Chet. It's been 50 minutes in. Obviously, we stalled for a few minutes in between. Yes. We will have a second opportunity when you're ready to sit down with me, you and Sean, and do whatever. We're going to end this live feed. It's been. I'm grateful for you giving your time up to us and sharing your story with us.
Thank you as well.
The book sounds very interesting. I'll probably get a copy off Sean.
I'm going to send you a signed copy, Darren, okay? Yes. I'll get the... I'll sort that for you.
Put that up there, Sean. Show the viewers what it is exactly. Explain just a little bit more. Have you got an ISBN number there? Is there anything on the back that you can identify it with?
Well, I can read the back. So in 1999...
Hang on. I'd just like to say, Chet, stay there a minute while he reads the back. But as soon as he's finished with the back, we're going to be shutting the live down. So.
Okay, bro.
It's been a great experience speaking to you, mate, and thanks for giving us the time and speaking to us.
And you.
Thanks, mate.
In 1999, Chet Sandu was arrested at gunpoint in Alicante Airport for smuggling the largest quantity of illicit pharmaceutical drugs in Spanish history. Overnight, he went from living in the shadows of the Costa del Crime's underworld to being labelled a notorious supervillain in the international press. Incarcerated alongside murderers, rapists, and terrorists in a supermax security wing, he had to navigate a world of murderous knife fights, prison breaks, drug taking, and high stake power plays. In Self-Made, Jews Paid, learn how a British-born Asian kid with disabilities, raised in a corner shop, emerged as a protector of his family from racist thieves and hooligans. Be prepared to be entertained, informed, and offended by Chet's no-holds-barred account of raves, drugs, bodybuilding, entering the fashion industry, working the doors, and life in one of the world's deadliest places to be incarcerated. And it is gripping as hell and funny as fuck as well. It's brilliant.
I know you read it. You like the show. You said that.
Yeah, it's superb. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, mate. And we'll be speaking to you again. Sean, right, I'm going to speak to you in a second. Take care, Chet, brother.
Sure. Right,
thanks for watching, everyone. Thank you. Cheers.
So, Sean, we're still on live.
Okay, great.
So thanks for that, mate. You set it up. I think it stalled halfway through due to technical difficulties, so it sort of harmed us a little bit. But what a man he is, you know, what a story he's got, and it's only damn right that he's got a book out there so individuals can read his struggle and where he's at now. Have you got anything you want to say at the end there, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, to go for everything Chet has been through, and then to get rid of the gangsteritis, and to fly around the world helping kids with AIDS, because I know... Like up to a third of them where I was housed in Arizona had hepatitis C. So I got to learn all the ins and outs of hep C. It sounds like Chet went through the same thing. He got to learn the ins and outs of these people with AIDS. And like he said, you know, these kids, they're born with it. It's not a good shift. Their lives, you know, they're going to have to deal with that. They're probably going to, the lives are going to be shortened. To go out and help those kids, it's just such a heartwarming end to the story. And Darren, I just want to take my hat off to you. I just sat there mesmerized, you guys speaking. I didn't have to say anything. And you're just such a powerful host in your own right. You just got a completely different side out of Chet than I'd previously got outside of him on my channel. So, you know, hats off to you, to your powers as a presenter.
Well, nice one, Sean. Well, I don't consider myself a presenter just yet. I'm on a learning curve. Every time I get on this learning curve, I seem to get shut down. But as always, we link up, everything positive starts kicking into my life and I start creating content that's powerful. I'd just like to reiterate about what he does with them kids who have got AIDS in them very, very dire places. And it's, you know, we can only be appreciated for his actions, can't he? So anyone that wants to read Chet Sandhu's book, you want to get to know his story a lot more, a lot deeper, you know, I'll see if I can get the link and put it up there. It's been a great second interview. Yeah. All right. Peace out, everyone. Keep it real. As always, thank you, Sean. We'll speak off live. And then to the viewers that's locked in this afternoon who weren't expecting this live feed, thanks for popping in. I don't know where yous are or what yous were doing, but it's appreciated that you've came in to watch it. Next time, you'll get a lot more notice. So you can plan ahead and see if you want to pop in then. What a guy Chet Sandhu is, and his book. What's it called again, Sean?
Self-Made Jews Paid, available worldwide on Amazon.
There you go, Self-Made Jews Paid. If you can and you can afford to, go and get it. Peace out, L5, shout, choose a life, not a knife, the Real Crime, Real Time podcast.
Take care, everyone. Chet Sandhu's book is finally available worldwide on Amazon. He's one of our most viral podcast guests ever. The book is called Self-Made Jews Paid, an Asian kid who became an international drug smuggling gangster. Do you want to read some of the back, Jen?
Yeah, go to the blurb. In 1999, Chet Sandhu was arrested at gunpoint in Alicante Airport for smuggling the largest quantity of illicit pharmaceutical drugs in Spanish history. Interesting. Overnight, he went from living in the shadows of the Costa del Crime's underworld to being labelled a notorious supervillain in the international press. Incarcerated alongside murderers, rapists and terrorists in a super maximum security wing, he had to navigate a world of murderous knife fights, prison breaks, drug taking and high-stake power plays. Good bedtime read.
In Self-Made Jews Paid, learn how a British-born Asian kid with disabilities, raised in a corner shop, emerged as a protector of his family from racist thieves and hooligans. Be prepared to be entertained, informed and offended by Chet's no-holes-barred account of raves, drugs, bodybuilding, entering the fashion industry. Did you know that he dated Kylie Minogue and Naomi Campbell?
Latest interview.
Working the doors and life in one of the world's deadliest places to be incarcerated. If you enjoyed Chet's podcast series of us, there's a lot more detail in the book. Check it out. Worldwide on Amazon, ebook, paperback, and audiobook.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.